Tristan McDonald here for the first episode in our third series of podcasts, and this time around, with Christmas holidays in mind, we are focusing on the gift aspect of dyslexia. In this series, we'll be hearing from a talented musician, entrepreneur, publisher, and more, but firstly, I'm turning the tables on Sue and interviewing her. She is a David Dyslexia facilitator, the author of Fish Don't Climb Trees, and the founder of the Whole Dyslexic Society, and who better to explain what this gift actually is. Hello, Sue. How are you?
Well, this is fun being the other end of the interview.
A bit different. So I guess, firstly, what is this gift of dyslexia?
Okay, well, in the Gift of Dyslexia book, Ron Davis describes the gift of dyslexia as being a natural ability to alter perception. Now, dyslexia, the word means difficulty with words, and perception is the way in which information is taken from our outside world to our inside world. So we have a way of altering how that information comes into our world. And we can alter all of our senses, apparently, except for taste. But I'm going to use the visual sense to give you this example. So if I asked you to close your eyes and imagine an elephant, I would then say to you, what do you suppose is doing the looking? Because when we close our eyes and we have an imaginary image, something is looking at it. And if that's a bit of a stretch, when you're in a movie theater, you're sitting in your seat and you're watching the film. You're not in the film. And it's exactly the same when we imagine an imaginary film. We are looking at it from somewhere. So if, going back to the elephant, I said to our listeners, could you close your eyes and could you imagine a three-dimensional elephant? There will be some listeners who don't see anything. There'll be some who see maybe a flat photograph of an elephant, and there will be some who can imagine a three-dimensional elephant. So what I want them to do is I want them to tell the elephant to stay still, but in their imagination, they're going to walk around it. So they're not going to see themselves walking around it. They are actually going to walk around it in their perception and see the elephant from the side and from the back and the side and the front and even from above if they wanted to. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so if they are able to do that, they have this gift of dyslexia. This ability to alter your perception works incredibly well for you in the three-dimensional world. I mean, if you're an architect and you want to imagine the house that you're designing, you've got your own virtual reality. If you're a hairdresser who sees a person in front of them with their real eyes, in their imagination, they can see what the haircut that they're striving towards will look like. Athletes, if they were to use this ability, they might see the whole game from above. Wayne Gretzky tells us that he can see the whole hockey game from above, and obviously that gives him a big advantage over the other players.
Mm-hmm.
Skiers, when they're at the top of a ski hill, if their coach is explaining the run to them, they can visualize it. It's as if they're actually going down it, and so it's not a surprise when they do it for real. Mm-hmm. And I think people who plan events, they can go into a room and they can visualize the flow of the event and where everything should be, mm-hmm. and the colors that they can use. It's a huge, huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our inventors, we have our artists, we have our designers, we have athletes, as I said, we have strategists, entrepreneurs, people who just see the big picture. And I think sometimes when people say they're happy that they have dyslexia, they say it in a general term, that they're just happy with being out-of-the-box thinkers and being able to see the big picture. But the actual essence of what they're doing is this natural ability to alter perception. And that's the gift that we share.
Right. Very fascinating. It's extraordinarily creative. And as our listeners know, I'm dyslexic. I find the challenge with this gift is largely trying to manage it. Because we think with these images very, very quickly.
Well, you raise a good point, because the images that come into our head, apparently they come in at a rate of 32 images a second.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the movie theater, the images that we would watch there would be 24, 25 a second. So a great deal of time is spent processing images that we actually can't focus in on.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to, then I presume we've just slowed them down and we basically daydream.
Yeah.
Right? And I think there is a degree of dyslexia. Like, I feel I'm mildly dyslexic, and whereas my son is very dyslexic, but the talent comes with that. So I'm only mildly talented, and he's very talented. But the problem is, obviously, when we use that same ability in the two-dimensional world and had a lowercase d in front of us, if we start seeing that from 180 degrees or anywhere else, it's not a d anymore. So those symbols in the two-dimensional world, they have to be seen from the same perception as our real eyes. So if you use your gift to a very mild extent, say you'll be mildly talented, and you'll probably only be mildly challenged.
Right.
But if you use it to a great extent, you'll be greatly challenged, but you'll also be greatly talented.
Right.
And I noticed that one of the reasons I think my son uses his gift a lot is because when he was starting school, he had a lot of ear infections.
Right.
And so when school wanted him to do everything in that auditory sound-based sense, his auditory processing wasn't working that well anyway. He wasn't hearing that well. So he relied on that visual gift to a greater extent, I believe.
I can relate to him because probably about the same age, I had pretty bad ear infections as well.
And it's not that they have anything to do with the cause. It's just that because that processing wasn't working as well, we had to rely on the nonverbal.
Right. So how many people have dyslexia?
Officially, it's 10 to 15% of the population.
Oh.
I would say it's probably much closer to 30% because you have people who are determined, resourceful, people-pleasing individuals who are going to make it work somehow, and they don't become behavior problems, and therefore they don't get tested.
Right. So,
and I'm not saying all the children that get tested are behavior problems, but I'm just saying that if your challenge is really, really obvious, then you'll probably get tested. And if you're a behavior problem, you'll probably get tested.
Right.
But if you're one of these kids who works around it, tries twice as hard, gets help people to help them in different ways, uses all those coping mechanisms, they might not get tested. I was never tested.
No. How do you know you have it?
If you are aware that you have a challenge and you want to know what the reason could possibly be, and you're maybe a teenager or an adult, I mean, you can go on online and you can see our list of 37 characteristics. There's a little assessment test that can give you a general idea of whether you might be mildly, moderately, or severely dyslexic. And that would be on the dyslexia.com website and positivedyslexia.com website. But as a child, when you're first starting into school, you have no idea that you could possibly learn in a different way to anybody else. You just know that you're having a struggle. And nobody talks about how we think and how we learn. Nobody sits next to us and says, do you talk to yourself in your head, or do you have a film going on in your head, or do you have both? It's just not mentioned.
I remember oftentimes if there are labels like ADD and ADHD, if possible, you could have dyslexia. I know there tends to be a close connection.
I think there is a connection between dyslexia and ADD and ADHD, because as I mentioned, we think in 32 images a second, right? And that's an incredible, I mean, that's basically a subliminal thought process. And so sometimes when people are talking, we know just what we're going to say. We know what the answer is, but we have to wait for them to stop talking. And sometimes when people are talking at 3 or 4 words a second and we're thinking much, much faster, we're just bored, honestly. The communication isn't keeping up with our rate of processing, and so we tend to fidget. I believe that attention deficit disorder is a bit of a misnomer. I think it's attention management that's the problem. Nobody shows us how to manage it.
That's what I got often was just you have to focus.
But nobody told you how. How would they have expected you to manage it without showing you what we do in our programs? It's impossible.
What are some talents dyslexia can lead to?
Well, if you have this amazing process of being able to imagine things from all different angles, I think you're sort of bound to be creative. You know, I think anything that you're going to create, particularly with your hands, carpenters, we have people who are painting and designing. We have actors. I mean, if an actor is able to really put themselves in their character, that's a huge advantage. We have strategists. People who are just really good at things that are developing in the 3D world. And I think as well, because we can alter not only our visual sense, but also our hearing sense. We do have musicians who will know the instant that something is not quite right. And we do have people with a feeling sense who have incredible empathy. And I remember there was one massage practitioner that I worked with. And when he was doing a massage, he could see in his head the muscles that he was working on. He felt them with his hands, obviously, but he could see the picture in his head as well,
right,
which was a huge advantage.
I know we've touched on this one before. Do schools give the chance for people with this way of thinking to thrive?
I often use the word schools, and I think I have to be careful here because I don't want people to think I'm talking about the teachers. I'm talking about the education system.
Yeah.
I don't think the system is designed to be dyslexic friendly. I think it's designed for the people who process auditorily. We're taught to read by sounding out. We do not process auditorily. Our primary processing sense is the visual and the kinesthetic. And so we're having to function in a school system that doesn't work for us. And I think if anybody's listened to the late Sir Ken Robinson's TED talk, where he says, do schools kill creativity? He showed us very clearly that schools are cutting down on music, they're cutting down on dance, they're cutting down on the arts. All the things that do allow creativity, they're being seen as sort of slightly superfluous. They're sort of frills on the edge of the education system. But in actual fact, that creativity and being outdoors and being in nature, these are things that are being cut, unfortunately. Especially now, the kids are online so much.
Is there a reason why? Why are these things being cut down, even though we all know these things are extraordinarily important for developing minds?
Well, I think we have to ask the educators who educate the educators what their goal is with the education system. I mean, 500 years ago, the goal was to create people who were disciplined so that they could go into the factories and the forces. I really can't imagine that's the same goal. And for some reason, they seem to think that the arts are an embellishment rather than a necessity. Sir Ken Robinson said that the only thing that is going to get us through into the future is creativity and problem solving. Because say there's a child in school now who's 8 years old, we have absolutely no idea what the jobs will be when that child leaves school. Because
right.
The world is changing so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only thing that we really can do is prepare that child to be creative, to be able to problem solve. And then whatever comes their way, they'll be able to handle.
Mm-hmm. Do all dyslexics start with the ability to alter perception? Or is it kind of like a learnt trait?
Oh, I have a funny feeling that every single child, as they come into this world, has an ability to alter their perception.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've yet to meet a child that doesn't have an imagination. I mean, we're talking the very little ones, right?
Yes.
They have imaginary friends. They have imaginary games. They can spend hours playing with the cardboard box and making it into all sorts of things. So, I mean, there could well be children who are not able to imagine, but I find it difficult to believe that there are very many. And I believe that as soon as they hit our education system, they're pushed into this linear, sequential, sound-based world. And
right.
Some of them will go quite happily, and some of them will not.
Mm-hmm. It works for some, but not all. And
it's not our way of operating, is it?
No. And I mean, and that's the whole point of this, is there are other ways other than the linear way of learning.
And you can teach to both.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you also said something about, can you learn to be dyslexic? And it's funny because I have a very wonderful sound-based learner. Oh, Donna Dirksen.
Oh, yes.
She was in the second series of podcasts, I think. And she doesn't see images in her head at all.
Mm-hmm.
And she would love to learn to be able to do that. And I think she said in the podcast that she was trying very much to do that. So I don't know if you can learn to do it. Or maybe I should be saying, I don't know if you can go back to how you were when you originally arrived in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you can, for this reason, because I presume I came into this world with this way of thinking. I know I switched it off. And the only reason I know I switched it off is because it came back. When I was at school, I was in a very linear, sequential, sound-based school. I was one of these people-pleasing kids. I would have done anything to be the teacher's favorite. And so I worked really, really hard. And I got through till 18. I got some A-levels, da-da. And so when I was training to become a facilitator, Ron was talking to me and saying things like, Imagine where you used to live. It would always be a flat photograph. And one day he said, imagine where you live. The flat photograph came up. And then all of a sudden it became three-dimensional. It, in my mind, it just morphed. It's like it came out of the magazine and it became 3D. And I found myself walking around it and seeing things at the back of the house I'd completely forgotten were there. So I know that I must have switched it off because it came back. And I think maybe quite a few people do that in order to get through the education system. I can't imagine I'm the only person that happened to. I think I know when I turned it off, actually. When I really think about it, I remember being in, you would say, grade three, and we had to learn spelling lists. I remember photographing the words, and the photograph would be literally a flat photograph. It would just be as if it was printed on a page. And I used to check the word that I was writing with the photograph in my head. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody would say that's a photographic memory. A lot of people have that.
Yeah. Is there a connection with photographic memory and dyslexia that you're aware of?
All I can say is that if I met somebody now who said they had a photographic memory and that they would bring up pages of the textbook to pass exams, which is what I did. I used to visualize that diagram's on that page. Or I remember it was talking about this. So I used to bring up the pages of the textbook. I used to answer the questions correctly. And it would seem that I knew what I was talking about. I couldn't remember it afterwards, but at the time I passed the exam. If somebody said that to me now, I would be tempted to think that they might be dyslexic and they might have done what I did purely because that's my experience. Having said that, when I do ProDs and I ask people to imagine the elephant, like I said, you'll have some people who can't see a thing, some people who see flat photographs, and some people who see 3D. So I presume there must be quite a few people who will always imagine in flat photographs, who will always imagine 2D. And I presume they could have the photographic memory.
Right, yeah. Is it possible for the educational system to encourage this altered way of perception?
So can we encourage our education system to encourage us?
Yes.
In the way we think.
How would we do that? I mean, obviously this podcast, but...
I think any encouragement has to start with information. I think we have to get this information to be heard by the educators, to be understood by the educators. And then we can perhaps show them ways that could be way more accessible to all the children in their class. Mm-hmm. Davis learning strategies are a perfect example, and everything is hands-on and it's 3D and it relies on that visual memory. But I think it can go beyond that, and I think we should bring back more art subjects, more pottery, more woodwork, more trades, if you like, engineering, even more things that children can invent, that they can build. It's a wonderful organization called Destination Imagination. It's an after-school thing that children can sign up for, and they give them a problem, they give them a task, and the children have to invent something that fulfills that task, and then they have to write a story about it, and then they have to act it out, and it encompasses all sorts of wonderful things.
In focusing on the gift, can you learn to alter perception?
Can you learn to alter perception? It's a really good question. I wonder if just telling somebody that it's a possibility, they might be able to encourage that idea. The story that I was telling you about, that I was looking at this 2D photograph and it suddenly turned into a 3D house, I don't think I was working at it, but I do think that I was with a group of people that made me feel safe, and that possibly allowed it to happen. Maybe in my education, it wasn't a good idea to do that. Maybe I'd got that message somehow, and maybe that's why I switched it off. But I know that because I was with this group of people and they were all able to do this, they were all talking about it, it opened up for me again. Whether or not we can actually learn to do it is a really good question. We've got to find somebody now who can't and see if they can. Yeah.
Are you glad you have this gift?
Yes, totally, 100%. I would hope that way more people would be coming into this world with this gift. Just that ability to see the whole picture, to be a visionary. I'm very, very happy that I have this way of thinking and that I've managed to meet so many people who have this way of thinking, because as a facilitator, every single client who comes in uses this gift in different ways. Mm-hmm. when you hear their stories about how they use their gift for their work, how they use it for their hobbies, the stories that go with it, what they're good at because of it, it's absolutely remarkable. And when I take the kids on the summer camp outing, when you have a group of youngsters sort of age 8 to 14, they've never met each other before. They all have this way of thinking. They all know that everybody else has this way of thinking. The energy that sparks from them is just magical. They're like instant friends. They really are. They're totally with their like-minded peers. Yeah. I'm very glad to be part of that.
That actually just sparked another question. What are some of the most influential lessons that you've learned from the people that you have facilitated?
To meet them where they are. Never to judge that anything they do is right or wrong. If they have an ability, you just accept. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could see that. I didn't know you could hear that. It's a wonderful opportunity to be able to meet people exactly where they are and to know that they're amazing, to have the honor and the privilege of being there when they share all this information with you. It's magical.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll end on that.
That's a good place to start.
Thank you very much, Sue.
Oh, thank you, Tristan, very much.
Perfect.
Well, that short but speedy introduction leads us on to Ed Roman's interview. If you'd like to get hold of us, just email info@thewds.org. Bye for now.